I think about horses and I think about the planet, and I actually find a lot of similarities, and I'll explain. So I think about horses and they are large, gorgeous, graceful creatures, right? But they're actually really fragile. It does not take a lot for a horse to get injured. You know, one small step incorrectly or a change in diet can like lead to catastrophic results, right, for a horse. And when I think about it, I sort of liken this to our global ecosystem or our planet, because the planet, it seems so vast, it seems so endless, so plentiful, but in actuality, it is so fragile. Well, I'm Megan Maltenfort. I am the Vice President of ESG, or Environmental, Social, and Governance for Cardinal Health, which is a very large healthcare company headquartered in Ohio.
Oh, nice. Are you in Ohio also?
I'm not. I live in South Jersey, just outside of Philadelphia. So I'm remote. My entire team is remote all over the country.
Oh, amazing. So, you know, obviously you and I are both a little bit on the ESG industry world, but I can only imagine that few of the horse people listening to this are. So maybe can you describe a little bit about what that means to be VP of ESG and specifically at a healthcare company like Cardinal Health?
Yeah, certainly. And I've been in the ESG space for about 15 years now in different industries. I was in food before I joined Cardinal. I was at Campbell Soup Company. But it's really great to be in healthcare because I think, well, inherently, this industry is mission driven, right? We exist in order to help improve the lives of people every single day. And so it's been a really natural sort of extension of that mission to bring in our environmental and social responsibility work. So for those who might be less familiar with what ESG means, and you may hear it called lots of different things, sustainability or social responsibility, or there's lots of jargon around it, but essentially it's how we take care of the planet, how we take care of our people in our company, the people in our supply chain, the people in the communities where we live and work, and how we take those things into consideration as we build our business into the future.
Yeah, that's such an awesome summary too of like how ESG could be incorporated, not only in, you know, corporate, but also, I mean, the values of ESG can be incorporated anywhere, right? It's like one of those things that, you know, it's like, just try to make things a little bit better for everyone and, you know, eventually can get to a point there. But you said something interesting. You know, you've been in the industry for 15 years. So a lot of folks in the industry might say you're an OG, right? Like you were in it before it was cool, before all the hype around it a few years ago. So what was it? I'm curious, just from your perspective, like what was the difference then and versus now? Like what are the things that you prioritized 15 years ago and versus now? That's just for my personal curiosity, actually.
It's so different. It is, you know, when I think back when I started 15 years ago, it was, you know, to have time on a board agenda was unheard of. Right. I couldn't even imagine sitting in front of a board of directors. I mean, even sitting in front of a CEO and leadership team was hard to imagine at that time. It was not a strategic priority for the organization. It was, you know, a way to engage employees. It was a way to satisfy customers, because certainly customers were beginning to ask questions. The more mature customers were beginning to ask questions around, you know, what are you doing in terms of your energy consumption, your water consumption, your waste generation, and essentially, how can you help us meet our goals as our supplier? There were no regulations really in play in this space. So it was very much voluntary. It was very much a feel-good type of thing. It was really immature, I would say, right? And now fast forward to even just the last couple of years, and the conversation, the pressures externally have changed dramatically. We've got lots of regulations in play now across the environmental and social sides, both in the US and abroad. We have customers that are not just asking for this, but they're requiring it in contracts. We have customers making business decisions based on sustainability. So it's just really, really different. And I think the expectations around what you put out there externally, whether that's your data or your stories, it just really needs to be buttoned up. Whereas before, I think there was not as much scrutiny. There were not as many eyes on it. And so we took more liberty to kind of fluff the story a little bit, if that makes sense. And now we're really very precise in what we say. And if we can't validate it, it doesn't go out the door.
Wow. Yeah. 15 years ago was a, like, if I'm hearing you right, 15 years ago, it was people who cared, right? It was like voluntary. Maybe you grew up, you know, environmentally friendly, and you're, and you, now you have this company and you're like, okay, I want my company to reflect that value. Now it's that plus like actual like pressure from the government agencies, actual pressure from, you know, businesses. It's no longer a fad. It's more of a, like a, the way you do business, right? That's kind of like the biggest contrast I think that I'm hearing.
Yeah, I think so. I think it's definitely being built in. I mean, we still have work to do, of course. And I think geographically it's different as well. Mm-hmm. In terms of that embeddedness in decision making. But yeah, it's definitely becoming more built into the way that we talk to stakeholders, the way that we see customers talking to us. And it's really enabling also, you know, more innovation, more collaboration with stakeholders up the supply chain, down the supply chain. So, from a business perspective, it really makes sense.
Yeah, absolutely. I think that's for you and I, that's obvious, right? Like sustainability and business performance are like hand in hand, right? Like it makes sense to, you know, replace, you know, to add renewable energy to your buildings. You know, it reduces your utilities costs. It also reduces your emissions by quite a bit. So these kinds of things are interesting. How did you get into it? 15 years ago, like what was the spark there that got you into this?
Yeah. And I'm sure we'll get into this at some point in the conversation, but I've had a passion for the environment ever since I was a little girl, a passion for animals, a passion for nature. And so, you know, coming up, growing up, I sort of knew I wanted to do something tied to that, animals, nature. And that just continued to kind of develop as I developed in my understanding of environmental issues, human impact on the environment, and kind of how I might enter into the environmental field and what my career might look like. So when I graduated from undergrad, I had no idea what I wanted to do. I just knew I wanted to do something environmentally focused. I thought maybe that was law. I became a paralegal for a few years and realized that that was not the path for me. While I was a paralegal, I was printing out, you know, thousands of documents on a regular basis, as you can imagine, lots and lots of paper, and none of it was being recycled. And this was sort of my first entrance, I would say, into trying to change corporate behavior. I approached some of the senior partners and I asked, can we set up a recycling program? And they sort of said, you know, not at this time, kind of, you're here to do a different task, right? Yeah. And like sort of focus on the task that you're here to do. And that drove me to sort of ask myself the question, like, how do I change the minds of folks like this? At that time, this was, you know, a long time ago, more than 15 years ago, I was starting to see more sustainability reports coming out from some of the early movers in this space. And I thought, wow, I might have the opportunity to change business from the inside. That's really interesting. That drove me to go back to school. I got my master's in environmental management at the Nicholas School at Duke. And that really set me on my journey. I was really focused on corporate sustainability as soon as I entered that program, and was really fortunate to get a job in the space right out of that program and have been in it ever since.
Yeah, I love that. I think it's awesome how, you know, the passion for animals, the passion for the environment, it always starts early. And for, you know, it's funny, while you were telling that story, I almost felt validated because similar, I have like a, you know, similar story, you know, like, back in the day, you know, we'll talk about it here in a second, you know, horses, right? Like horses were always a part of my life. You go outside, you bond with an animal, you start to care about animals a little bit differently. I think personally than others, who aren't horse people, but we can touch on that later. And then, you know, eventually I think, I don't know if you went through this phase, I always wanted to be a vet. I like for
100%.
a long time. I went through exotic vet, marine biologist, like equine vet for a long time, and then eventually settled on, just a business degree. But growing up, you have all these dreams, and you're like, I want to help animals. No, that's so awesome. That's cool. So, actually, let's like dive into it a little bit. Like, this is the Horse People podcast, right? Like, what is your experience with horses? How do you incorporate horses? Like, let's just start with how you started riding.
Yeah, I've been riding for over 30 years. I started riding when my grandmother got me a pack of 8 riding lessons as a Christmas gift. So it was sort I guess it was sort of random, but not really, because again, my family knows my passion for animals. I was never really a team sport, traditional team sport kind of person. I'm not like traditionally athletic, I guess. But for those who ride, you know that that's a totally different type of athleticism. And so this was kind of a perfect hobby for me to start with. So started riding when I was 8 and immediately fell in love and really just started, you know, that really became a big part of my life, riding pretty regularly. I mean, really regularly. And that's how it started. So, you know, when I went to college, I rode competitively, and that's really the only time I rode competitively. For me, it's been more just a passion, a love, a therapeutic outlet, more than a focus for competition and winning. But it was fun to ride competitively in college a little bit, and kind of up my game a little bit. But now it's very much back to just doing it for the fun and the sort of soul-filling aspect of it.
Yeah, I find myself getting like I almost get anxious if I spend like a month without riding or something. I'm like, something's off with me. I don't know what's going on. And I go for a ride and I'm like, oh, this is what I needed.
I know. Well, I haven't ridden for the last 4 years, and I just got back into it about 2 months ago. And it honestly, I can say it really felt like things were kind of off balance without it in life. And now that I'm back riding, it feels so good. It feels so right. Like things are back aligned.
Yeah, you feel like your life is a little bit more, just like it flows a little easier. So, what did you ride competitively in college? What was the discipline you were doing?
Well, I was riding through the Intercollegiate Horse Show Association, IHSA. So we were riding, like, you know, mostly flat work, but some jumping and nothing crazy. I mean, I rode hunter jumper growing up, but it wasn't anything major. It was mostly fun competition, honestly. But we had a great time. And it's, you know, I said earlier that I wasn't into traditional team sports, and this was actually the first time that I was able to ride as part of a team. Because typically, right, you're just an individual riding a horse. Even if you enter a horse show, you're not typically representing a team, right? But this was really the first time I got to be part of a team, which was really fun. It was a really fun experience.
Yeah, it is interesting because even when you're part of a team, and whatever, but you're still like focused on your individual performance. It's always, I think, no matter what horse sport, even polo, is a lot of it's a team sport. Obviously, there's four horses on your team and four people on the team, but you're also like you're riding. You have to like perform individually. It's cool. Yeah, I love that about horses too, and horse sports specifically. That's cool. So you just got back into riding. That's awesome. What happened? Like, what the hiatus versus that? Did you have a horse and then you didn't, and then it was harder to get into
I have
it?
never had a horse. I have never had my own horse. That's one of my life goals. So hopefully in the near future that'll happen. But no, it was COVID. So my barn shut down for a time because of COVID. And then I got pregnant and I had a baby. And
Oh my God,
so it
congratulations.
was, yeah, thank you. So she's over 3 now. And so, and I moved out of state. And so then I had to sort of set myself up with a whole new barn, a whole new network. And so all of those things took a little bit of time to sort through, but I'm really happy
Yeah.
that I'm back now.
Yeah, that's awesome. I'm curious, like, how do you like in a new town, I imagine, there's folks in your position a lot, like, What do you do to like find a barn that you kind of feel comfortable at? I know that's always like a bit of a hard thing to do.
It's been so much more challenging than I thought. It's taken me over 6 months to find a place who would even accept me because I don't have my own horse. And what I have found where I've moved, which is not, I mean, I live in South Jersey, just outside of Philadelphia. It's not anywhere kind of remote or strange, but it seems that lesson barns are getting fewer and far between, at least in this area, that there is definitely an expectation that you on your horse, that you're working towards showing your horse and like you want to be competitive. That's definitely, like I said, not where I'm at. I just want to find a nice lesson horse and you know, do some jumping and do some flat work and be fit and have that connection with the horse. And that's really what I'm looking for. So it's been really hard. But lots of Facebook group posting. There's like a South Jersey equestrian Facebook group and posting on the local mom groups to try to find other moms who are also horseback riders and lots of Google searching and just like random outreach to barns, random calls, emails. Yeah, it's been a lot of work.
That's crazy. I wonder if there's like an there's got to be like a I hate this. I'm an idea guy. I'm like in tech, you know. I'm like, what if there's a marketplace where you can
I know.
There's
I've
got to
never
be
had
a
this kind of trouble finding a place to just take lessons at before.
yeah,
So,
insane.
anybody's listening out there, there's definitely riders who are just looking to take some lessons.
The other question I had on that side of things is, or not question, but rather idea is, I started endurance riding here recently, and just going the endurance riders have been the nicest group of people. They always have an extra horse, right? Because most endurance rider, most people have two horses, and so they can't ride both at the same time. And so
Yeah.
I've been posting on the endurance Facebook groups and saying, "Hey, I'm in town, blah blah blah. Like, if there's an extra horse you need worked, you know, I can hold my own on the saddle or whatever." And I always get like five or six DMs and like, "Oh my God, I really need your help. I'd love to." So my point being, you should explore endurance.
I will. That's such a good tip.
Yeah,
That's
they're
great.
the nicest horse people, and they always are looking for people to put on the back of their horses.
That is so wonderful to know. Where I don't even know where you live geographically.
I'm in Denver, Colorado right now.
Okay, good to know.
Yeah, but I've been moving about since the summer. I was in Springfield, Missouri for the summer. Been following my girlfriend really. She's in physical therapy school and has been in clinical rotation. So,
Got it. Got it.
but now we're in
Well, that
Denver.
that's great. And that's helpful insight. So thank you. I will try to insert myself into that world a little bit and see what's going on in this area.
Yeah, totally. There's got to be like a Northeast endurance,
Definitely.
some and also the things about endurance that I love that you didn't ask about, or that you, I mean, you get to ride for a long time, you know, a couple hours, and you
Yeah.
trot and you gallop and you get to see. It's like how I imagine the in the old times before cars, like how people explored, you know. It's like, oh, let's just take horses out to the state park, you know, and that's what you do. It's been awesome. I've really enjoyed this discipline, and I came across it very accidentally.
I love that. That sounds really magical.
Yeah, it really is. I'll send you some pictures after, so just to get you just to get you to bite.
That's awesome. Thank you.
So curious on going back. So I think a big reason why I started this podcast was not only to explore the horse ecosystem because it's so large, right? Like endurance discipline, equestrian, fox hunting, polo. There's so many different things that I've jockeys, racehorsing. Oh my God, I could keep going. But another big reason was because I've always found that horse people are really resourceful and also like really good at being in like having how do I say this? Like there's a lot of different horse people out there, and I think it's always fun to like hear that story, right? So curious, going back to the to your current job at Cardinal Health as ESG and stuff. I know personally, there's a big prioritization in like decarbonization and supply chain stuff. And like, I'm curious, like, how do you even approach that at such a big company? You know, like, what are your priorities in the ESG world? And like, how can, yeah, I don't know. I have so many questions that I may have just stumbled through like five, but just curious,
No,
like,
it's
how you
good.
prioritize your day and
Yeah.
like what you're thinking about right now.
So I would say that I try to just do it sort of bite by bite. And I'm also a fan of what I say is like laying the breadcrumbs for people. So I try not to throw too much at folks too soon. I think education is so important in order to get buy-in in this work. So like I said, I've been at Cardinal Health for 2 years. Yesterday was my 2 year anniversary, and we've done like 4 years worth of work in that time, honestly. We have been on a really accelerated timeline, and it's been really exciting to see the support that leadership team and folks all across the organization have given to this work. And I think again, it's because we've kind of, even though we've done so much in such a little time, we still have we've sort of paced it appropriately, if that makes sense. And we've also prioritized just a handful of things. So you can't do it all. And I think you need to just sort of be honest about that. And so for us, it was really important to think about where can we differentiate ourselves based on who we are in the industry that we operate in, and where are we really going to make, investments or put focus on strategically to accelerate action. And so we have seven priorities, which may sound like a lot, but we started with like 17. So
Oh my
it's like drastically reduced. So we have seven key priorities. And I think the biggest success has been embedding accountability for that work within the places in the organization where it should belong.
God.
And I think in past roles that I've had, the business has sort of looked at the ESG team as owning everything under the ESG umbrella. But if you think about everything that falls under the ESG umbrella, it ranges from talent management, DE&I, EHS, all the way to patient care, product quality, supply chain resiliency, ethics and compliance, right? So it would be completely impossible for one small ESG team to own and manage all of that work, nor should they. So I think one thing that we've done successfully at Cardinal is identify those few priorities and then really work collaboratively with the folks who own those priorities to build out the plans to accelerate our progress in those areas. But it's hard. I mean, seven is still a lot,
How
and it's
many
kind of, yeah, go ahead.
people are on your sustainability team or ESG team?
So we have eight people, including me, and we manage three work streams, and half of my team, over half of my team is focused on one work stream, which is supply chain due diligence. So they're responsible for essentially the social compliance piece, like identifying mitigating risks in the supply chain around human rights, forced labor, the S side, moving into the E side now. And then we also manage the E side, so climate, water, and waste, and then all of the reporting and data that's now required of companies with all of these regulations coming our way and reporting frameworks and everything that's expected of us from outside stakeholders.
Yeah, I've found that engaging the supply chain is not only top of mind for a lot of ESG folks, but also really difficult.
So difficult.
I have an idea of like how we do it, but how do you engage your supply chain? Like, how do you go about doing that? Because, and for context, I guess also, I think just noting that engaging your supply chain is the biggest impact towards reducing emissions, right? Because
Yes.
The supply chain is a big chunk of that, right? Like where you get your products, where you get your paper, where you get your energy, utilities, etc. Or not utilities, but whatever, you get
How
the
you move your product from one place to the other if you don't actually own the trucks and all of it. Yeah, you're absolutely right. So And just for context too, around Cardinal's footprint. So when we finally last year measured the emissions in our supply chain, we realized that it was 99% of our footprint was in our supply chain. Only 1% is actually from our own operations in our four walls. So that makes it even more critical that we're engaging our supply chain, not just on the social side, which has been historically where we focus, but now moving to the environmental side because of what we've discovered. So we haven't yet launched a supplier engagement program on the environmental side. That's soon to come. But we are in the process of kind of strategizing on what that will look like. Luckily, I would say that suppliers are at different stages of maturity. So we have some suppliers who are large pharmaceutical manufacturers, for example, who've been doing this far longer than we have, and they have more ambitious goals than we have, which is great. And then we have others, suppliers who are not as mature and will need a little bit more engagement, conversation, maybe training, maybe giving them examples of how we've done it, how we've gotten buy-in, really just sharing lessons learned. So that's the plan, sort of separating suppliers by level of maturity and then targeting engagement differently based on where they are on that maturity journey.
Oh, that makes sense. So where I'm at right now at Green Project, what we've done is like engaged with the SMB part of the suppliers, and we help like measure the emissions and then report those out to whoever's asking for them, right? And in your case would be Cardinal. And the education piece of it is like such a big part of the engagement, because we found, and you and I are talking about it, like everybody knows about emissions and ESG and stuff. But in reality, like a bunch of SMBs are like, why do we need to do this? Like,
yeah.
What is an emission? What is an emission factor? What are greenhouse gas emissions? And it's like, sure. Let's take a step back and talk about like why this is important and what makes it, why Cardinal Health in this case is kind of going about doing the supplier engagement, right? Like 1% of your emissions are the ones that you're creating internally, directly, that you have directly.
Yeah. Exactly.
99% you don't. And that's exactly insane. So
it's really challenging. Yeah. Yeah. No, yeah. I mean, part of the way that we've gotten buy-in to internally is just to put it in terms of efficiency. You know, nobody wants waste in a system. And so the more that we can take waste out, whether that's wasted energy or wasted water or whatever, right? The more efficient that we can operate, the more we can cut our costs. And there's lots of other co-benefits as well. Like you put better lighting into a facility, you have employees who have safer working conditions, you have better productivity. So we're really trying to think kind of broadly and holistically about all of the benefits that will come to us from these investments as well.
Yeah. One thing. So while I was doing research for this call, I was, I was on the ESG page of Cardinal Health, which actually it's awesome to see it so front and center on the website. Whatever you did to talk to the marketing person to say, hey, this needs to be front and center, worked, because you don't see it as often. I always have to like go in and click and about, and then I didn't have to do that. I just went ESG. Great. Oh my God. Look at all these community things they're doing. Look at all the waste. I thought it was awesome. So I guess my question for you is, do you find with the community engagement piece of the ESG side of things, like how do you approach that? What are the things that you kind of think about when bringing in Cardinal Health as a brand, and also like as a company in the community? Like how do you go about those? That piece is really interesting to me.
Yeah. And so my team doesn't manage the community side. We have a separate community affairs team, which is wonderful. Okay. And manages all of our community engagement work, our employee volunteerism work, our Cardinal Health Foundation, but I can definitely speak a little bit about it. So historically, we've focused in a few key areas with our community engagement around access to healthy food, particularly around more recently focused on prevention of diabetes and helping folks get access to healthy foods so that they can hopefully lower their A1C value, which is a key indicator of diabetes. We've also been a key part of creating a pediatric suicide preventive collaborative, which is even hard for me to say because nobody wants to think about young people taking their own life, but unfortunately it is happening. And so we have partnered with a number of children's hospitals across the United States to provide training to clinicians and a program around how to identify signs, suicidal signs, and how to help young people take the steps they need to avoid that outcome, essentially. And then we've just launched a new signature initiative, which I'm really excited about, which is called Equity RX, which is really helping people who are underinsured or uninsured get access to the medications that they need. So we have had a big focus on equity in our community work and really thinking about how we can enable equitable access to care. And we think about that in a lot of ways. We think about equitable access to care for our employees. We think about it through just our business and what we do day to day. And then we obviously think about it in our community work as well. So Equity RX is obviously going to really focus in on that equity piece, which I'm really, really excited about.
Yeah, that's awesome. And I guess part of the reason I asked was earlier in the conversation, we were talking about how horses are, for us, you know, we're not competing really, you know,
like, yeah,
we're just like hobby horse people, I guess.
Yeah.
But they affect us so personally, right? Like, I think of going out and riding as like my form of therapy.
Yeah.
And it can help so many people, and it can, you know, the horses and health can also kind of, you can make the stretch, you can make the argument that they're in some way or another related.
I couldn't agree more. I think, I mean, you've got to find your outlet to mental well-being, right? And for us, certainly horses are one of our outlets for mental well-being, but it does, I think your point is spot on, because for me, I think, well, who just doesn't have access to horses? I mean, if we're being honest, right? For me growing up, I didn't own a horse because my family couldn't afford it. It's an expensive hobby, really expensive. And it is not accessible to a lot of people. So if we were able to open up that access to more people, I think it could be really powerful to think about how access to horseback riding could really help enable, mental health for folks who need an outlet and haven't found one that fits their needs. Because I can tell you that I haven't found it in other ways, the same way I've found it in horseback riding. And I've been super fortunate that I've been able to ride, which I appreciate that others have not had that opportunity.
Yeah. It gives me chills thinking about it, to be honest, because one thing is riding, but also just like, you know, horses are giant animals, and people who haven't interacted with horses often get a lot of the same benefits just by going up and petting them and being like next to a horse that, you know, is nice and,
yeah,
won't do anything to you. But that's an interesting correlation that, you know, as we were talking, I was kind of thinking about when you're thinking about like how do you get others involved in it and helping them spark like that does that question kind of make sense?
I know. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So I think it's different based on who we're talking about inside the company. So I think if we're just talking about, you know, our employees, right? We've got almost 50,000 employees. We've got like 48,000 employees across Cardinal Health. We're in 30 countries. We're big. And if we're talking about, you know, our regular employees, just like me, right? It's not been hard. They've honestly been coming to us, wanting more information, wanting to understand how to get engaged, how they can bring this into their day-to-day work, how they can contribute. So it's not taken a lot to get buy-in from our folks. They're really excited about it. And again, I think working in healthcare, you sort of have this innate feeling of wanting to do good, bring good into the world, right? In what you do day to day anyway. And this is just another way to do it, to just amplify the impact that we are already having as an organization. And people are just really excited about that. I always say that particularly younger generations more and more want to work for a company whose values are aligned to their own. And so this is a great tool for us to attract great talent, to keep great talent, and to keep that talent engaged over the long run. So we're absolutely seeing that. We have, like I said, we just have dozens and dozens of employees who wanna just get to work on this. And it's really now our job to help them understand how do they kind of activate this in their own role at Cardinal Health, which is sort of what we're now thinking about. Like, how do we customize or like see this work through their eyes? And I talk about like putting on your ESG glasses and seeing things through an ESG lens. Like, I've had 15 years to develop the muscle of looking at things through an ESG lens, whereas most of our employees are just coming into that. They're just starting to learn about what it means. And so it's our job to help them develop that muscle and sharpen those glasses, right? So that they can start to see their work every single day with that lens and think about, oh, when I'm, you know, doing order consolidation for this customer, that actually helps us reduce emissions. Or when I'm, you know, moving less trucks from one place to the other, or when I'm, you know, you just sort of fill in the blank. Most of it actually does have a positive impact, and we're just not taking credit for it in the way that we should right now. And that's an easy fix. We just have to get everybody kind of rowing in the same direction, which is what we're working on.
Yeah. Wait, when you say easy fix it, you mean like it's easy to get people behind it, but what I imagine is hard is having the platform or like the way to like track or hold. Does that make sense?
Yeah, it definitely does. And I'll clarify. So it's an easy fix in that it's easy because we're already doing these things. It requires no more effort or investment on our part. The hard part is exactly what you said. The hard part is tracking it in some centralized way, some meaningful way. And that is really, that's challenging. We have not cracked that nut yet. Right now, it's just anecdotal stories that are coming at us or teams reaching out to my team saying, hey, we want you engaged in this project or in this conversation, or we think this might have an emissions impact. Can you help us calculate it? So they're definitely proactively reaching out, but that's half a dozen teams maybe out of dozens and dozens and dozens of projects that I'm sure have positive impacts.
Yeah. Interesting. You almost want the solution to come from the inside out rather than the outside in, right? So I think that's an interesting problem that that they're solving, which is, I don't know. I'm just curious. You know, there's so many little different aspects of this whole ecosystem that are important to think about, that are important to, you know, act on, et cetera. Yeah. But, okay. So as we are like starting to think about wrapping up the conversation, I know I always have rapid fire questions at the end and.
Okay, great.
And, but you know, just like as we're going through this, like what I envision is people are taking out their horse right now and like taking them out on the set and they're like, okay, to this podcast doing whatever they need to do on their horse, right? And then so my question for you before I jump into the rapid fire is like, what is something you would hope someone takes away from this conversation that they could potentially implement either at the company they're working at the company that they own, or just in general? Like what's something that you wish someone listening to our conversation takes away?
So I think about horses and I think about the planet, and I actually find a lot of similarities, and I'll explain. So I think about horses and they are large, gorgeous, graceful creatures, right? But they're actually really fragile. It does not take a lot for a horse to get injured. You know, one small step incorrectly or a change in diet can like lead to catastrophic results, right, for a horse. And when I think about it, I sort of liken this to our global ecosystem or our planet, because the planet, it seems so vast, it seems so endless, so plentiful, but in actuality, it is so fragile. And we have taken a series of missteps, small and large missteps over time that have really added up to a catastrophic situation that we find ourselves in now. So I think just like the what you see on the surface is very different than like the actual fragility underneath is sort of this like theme that I see across both horses and the environment or the planet or the ecosystem, however you kind of want to think about it. So I think for horse people, it actually, if you can kind of make that connection, it can help them understand that how to sort of apply it in environmental terms, maybe, and how easy it is for things to shift in the wrong direction. And, but also like we have the ability to change our behavior and make decisions to prioritize well-being, right? To prioritize horse well-being, to prioritize environmental well-being. So to get into your question about like, I mean, I hope that that connection makes sense. I guess I'll say that first before I move on. But in thinking about like what some of the things you can do in your day-to-day life, because I get that question a lot, like, well, how do I really make an impact? Me as like one person, I just thought I'd share like a couple of things that I have done personally that I think have been impactful. So I am vegetarian. I've been vegetarian for over 30 years. So that was, I started riding horses and became vegetarian at the same time. And so one of the things though that my husband has done is he's committed to only eating one meat meal a day. So he eats two vegetarian meals and one meat meal a day. So that's, he doesn't want to give up meat completely, right? So I think that's like an easy thing that someone can do, just reduce your meat intake. It's better for the planet, but it's also better for your health. So win-win there. Reducing food waste. So we compost at home. We have a service that picks it up for us, but you can easily do it in your backyard. Food waste is the number one material in US landfills. It accounts for over 20% of all landfill waste. And it accounts for over 50% of methane emissions from landfills, which are a very potent greenhouse gas. So reducing waste that goes to the food waste specifically that goes to the landfill really has an impact. So something as simple as composting can really make a difference. One of the next things that I've started doing is I've started taking my own to-go containers to restaurants to help reduce plastic waste, right? I know it's sometimes I forget. I mean, a lot of times I forget, honestly, but when I do remember, it really feels good because I don't have to ask for a plastic to-go container that's inevitably probably going to end up in the trash because I have so many at home anyway. I just got an electric car for the first time. I know that's a bigger investment, but when you're ready to upgrade your car or have a different car, thinking about a hybrid or electric car option is something that you can think about. And the last thing is a lot of utilities, depending on the market you're in, will offer an option to buy renewable energy and often at like a 15 or 20% reduction in cost. So you can actually save money on your electricity bill and also support local renewable projects, community solar projects, for example. So just a couple of tangible examples of how day to day you can kind of change your behavior and make an impact.
Yeah, I love them. I love all of them. I couldn't agree with more with all of them. Two of them though stood out to me in particular. One is the taking your own to-go box thing. One, like, no one likes reheating their own stuff on in a styrofoam clamshell. And yeah. Actually, is my bar mitzvah project when I was 13 was to remove styrofoam clamshells from my middle school.
I love it.
And so for however long it's been since I'm 13, about 15 years almost, my mom and I, my family have always taken our own containers into restaurants and been like the black sheep. And they're like, what the heck are you doing? It's like bringing, I just say now I'm allergic to styrofoam and that I can't. Like, I kind of am, you know, it's not medical, but it is mental. It's a mental allergy.
I want it to be as common as bringing your own bag to the supermarket, right? Like, yeah. That's the place we should be at.
I couldn't agree more. And then the other thing that you mentioned, the food waste thing, which is really interesting when it comes to horses too, because horses poop and they poop a lot. And something I've been thinking about, and something it's funny you mentioned, is, you know, how can horse people think about manure as not as an output, but like as an almost like as an input to their barn, right? And I see, you know, you see people with like three or four horses, they're shoveling their own poop manure. I was gonna say a different word, and they, you know, I think about like how you can turn it into something else, right? It doesn't have to, a lot of them use it in to compost internally or whatever, but I've seen folks just like send it out to the trash and send it out to the landfill. And you can imagine that that is a huge part of what could be your emissions as a horse person. It's like, with all the manure at your barn.
Such a great point. Yeah.
And anyway, so you could put it in plants, but also I was looking into, I'm an idea guy. And so I've been thinking about this and I thought, what if you turn it into biochar and then you use the biochar, but that's too complicated. Anyways.
Well, keep thinking about it.
So long story short is, I agree with everything and think just like being more conscious and intentional about the things that you're doing, the choices that you're making in your daily life can lead to a big impact, right? You compound each choice over the year, right? Like
that's right.
Being vegetarian, like that's huge. How many cows have you saved, right? Like,
I should do that calculation one day.
You should think about it. Like if I had meat once a day, like your husband.
And, yes.
Okay. So for this last few minutes, let's dive into the rapid fire questions. They're pretty easy, but I'll ask you anyway. So do you have a favorite horse you've ever ridden?
Like a horse breed?
A horse, not a breed, a specific horse.
Oh, like the name of a horse.
Yeah, if you know it.
Like, yeah. Well, I have two special horses for me. Their names are Maverick and Teddy. And like I said, I never owned horses when I was young or ever, but I did have the opportunity to lease horses over my summer breaks when I was younger. And so those are the two different horses that I leased. And I got to take them to some horse shows and get them on trailers and just do all the fun stuff that I never thought I'd get to do at that age. So those are my two special horses, Maverick and Teddy. Yeah.
What breed were they?
Oh my gosh. I think they were both thoroughbreds.
Oh, nice.
Yeah.
I love thoroughbreds. They're my favorite too.
So yeah.
Glad to hear. Do you have a favorite place you've ever ridden or worked with horses?
Yeah. So my favorite place I've ridden is probably Australia. I've been super lucky to get to ride in Australia, like through the ocean, bareback, like very special. So that's probably one of the most beautiful places I've ridden. And then one of my favorite places that I've worked with horses is actually a place called Green Chimneys School, which is in New York. And when I was in undergrad, not far from Green Chimneys, I was able to basically do an internship while I was at school with their therapeutic riding program. So they take kids from the city and other kids, folks with special needs. And so I was able to be a part of their therapeutic riding program for a semester, which was really, really great. And I really hope to get back into that at someday as well. When I have a little bit more time on my hands, I really want to get back into therapeutic riding, teaching it, supporting it, however I can help there.
Yeah, that's awesome. Yeah. And the podcast you listen to with Lynn, that's, if you ever need a connection with the one person in this, on this planet that knows everyone in the horses for this area, I'm happy to make that introduction as well. So next question. So I guess I kind of already asked this, but what's your dream horse? If you have one, like you're thinking about getting a horse right now, you're kind of in that space. Like if you could pick a horse out of, a Breyer catalog, what would that look like?
Well, I'm going to go the complete opposite way. My answer probably won't surprise you, but my dream horse is actually one from an auction. I don't think I would ever just like buy a horse in the traditional sense. I would definitely want to save a horse. So I would absolutely, it would absolutely be one who was going to have not a great fate. And I definitely would want to rescue one. So in terms of breed, I honestly couldn't care less as long as it's tall enough for me, because I'm 5'8". So it just have to be tall enough for me to ride. And pretty well enough tempered, but I think that if I could rescue one, that would really be a dream come true.
Have you seen the Mustang auctions? And like, you can buy a 1-year-old Mustang for like $100.
Yes. I don't think that. Yeah. I mean, I don't know. The idea of like breaking a horse though is very intimidating to me. I feel like it'd have to be a horse that I could that I could already ride, maybe.
Yeah. Okay.
And then work to improve.
Super fair. But yeah, that when you said rescue a horse, it reminded me of all these like Mustang things that are happening.
Yeah.
That's also a huge issue environmentally. Also, like you could track. You know, there's 80,000 wild horses in our Great Plains area in the Western United States. Only can support 20,000. The BLM is nasty with the horses that they round out. You know, yeah. Like what do you do with all these things? There's like, that could be an interesting mm-hmm. line of that could mm-hmm. be a whole different podcast. Isn't it? and then the last question here, wrapping up, is what makes horses special to you?
For me, there's just, you know, it just feels like your souls are kind of in sync when you're riding, when you're working together. They put their trust in you. You put your trust in them. It's just a sort of magic that you can't really, it can't be explained. It just sort of has to be felt, if that makes sense. I just think horses are like truly so giving of themselves. And like I said before, it's my ultimate like therapeutic outlet. So for me, it's just really the connection, the bond, the syncing of body, of movement, of mind, all of it sort of coming together is really so special.
Yeah. It reminds me of a quote from Texas A&M that I don't know why we say this, but we say, from the outside looking in, you can't understand it. And from the inside looking out, you can't explain it. And it almost feels like if you're not bit by the horse virus, the horse bug is what I call it, then you'll never understand like the bond and like the feeling it is to have a horse underneath you and, you know, have that experience, which is just incredible. So if you haven't been on a horse yet, highly recommend it. If you're on a horse right now, then you understand.
We wish we were riding with you.
Yeah. Well, Megan, that's awesome. Thank you so much for making time. Really appreciate the conversation, and you know, I'm happy to be a resource on a variety of different subjects wherever you need it.
Thank you. I so appreciate you. Thank you for inviting me to be a part of this conversation. And I look forward to staying in touch and continuing to listen to your other podcasts about more horse people. We've just got to stick together.
Yeah, exactly. We got to stick together.